This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. The reason they call it the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast is because I got my finger chopped off several years ago in a monster truck accident, and I only have nine fingers now. So
I've been wondering.
Yeah. Monster trucks, dude. They're trucks. Like wrenching on them, you know? Just never know when they're going to take
super
a finger.
Manly stuff. Only.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever happened, I was doing it was extremely manly, and that's how I launched it. Parker McDonald, all the way from Alabama. Like where you live in Alabama, is that? I understand it's the South. Alabama's the South, but what's the Deep South? Is there something different?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, you got in Alabama, you got Lower Alabama and North Alabama, Central Alabama. People say that.
Yeah.
People say LA for Lower Alabama.
Okay.
I live in North Alabama, which is kind of the foothills of the Appalachian Mountain Range, kind of.
Yeah.
It's real hilly, not swampy really or anything like that. It looked a whole lot like Tennessee or North Georgia where I live. I hear people say Dixie all the time when referring to Alabama specifically. Like it's a general term for the South, I think. And I'm not originally from here. I'm originally from West Texas. So I've kind of learned all this stuff and kind of just done my best to try to figure out how it all works. But people say Dixie, they're referring to Alabama.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. But sometimes they're referring to the Deep South. I would say Deep South would be like Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, maybe South Carolina in there. Because Tennessee kind of has this little bit of a Midwestern corner to it up closer to Clarksville and all that stuff. Like it's more ag heavy in Tennessee, you know, and so that kind of gives you the more Midwestern feel.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest with you, that's a whole lot of words to say. I don't really know what is considered the Deep South, but I think I live in it.
Yeah. Okay.
Judging by the people I live around, I think I live in the Deep South.
With all due respect.
Yeah. With all due respect.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, like there is, when I lived in Alabama, there was still parts of it where, when I was there, you know, like around the Huntsville, the Decatur, that area is where I lived, in Hartsel. There's a small town and that's the one that I lived in, but there was still like a mix of Southern accent versus a little bit of the Midwestern accent. But when I went down south towards Birmingham and even a little further south to that on, you know, some escapades that I had, then you start to get into when I talk, I got the accent, right? Like there's, you know, there's nothing. And then I don't know why the state of Mississippi pops up when I was traveling from Louisiana. So I had to go to Arkansas to Louisiana, then across Mississippi into Alabama. Mississippi is its own thing. Like, dude, I was talking to some people there, very nice and stuff like that. But, like it was, the accents down there are crazy, man.
The funniest thing to me and one of the most bizarre things to me, and I promise you that this isn't supposed to sound racist at all, but hearing a black man sound like an old country white guy, like,
oh yeah,
you're a black guy talk like an old country white guy, and I'll throw you off real quick. And that's pretty common in Mississippi.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you talk to him on the phone, you wouldn't know what color a person was if you talk to him from Mississippi, because they're like, they all sound like country people. Like, they just all sound the same.
That's kind of funny. I love that. That's cool. Let me ask you this question. When you moved from West Texas to Alabama, was there any type of like culture shock or culture change that you had to adapt to?
It was subtle because we visited here. I had family in this area. We came here every year. My mom's from this area, so she's kind of that way. You know, she's kind of similar to the people out here or whatever. And she definitely has a strong Southern accent and things.
Yeah.
So there wasn't as much of that. Like I'd been here a lot, but it was absolutely different. I mean, like the in Midland, Texas, where I was raised at, we didn't have trees, you know, it's mesquite bushes, cactus, dirt. That's pretty much what you got out there. And you move out here and then you got woods and lakes. And growing up, we loved to fish. We'd have to drive 2 hours to do it.
Yeah.
Anywhere, like to find water, a puddle that we could throw a fishing line in is 2 hours. And out here, I've just got like five lakes, you know, within a 5 minute drive.
Wherever you want to go. Yeah.
So there was that. There was the public land access, dude, in terms of hunting, like that opened up my whole life.
Yeah.
Like everything in West Texas, it's like at the time and in the late 2010s, like 2009 when I moved here, you know, a lease out there was $2,000, which was a lot of money then. And $2,000 to $3,000 for the average guy out here, you had 190,000 acres of public land that you can go anytime you want. I didn't understand how that was even possible. You know, like when you grow up in a certain way and you don't hear about things, you don't know that they exist. You come here and it's like, holy cow, and really in West Texas, Texas in general is like one of the few states that doesn't have at least a fair amount of public land accessible, you know? And so I was just one of the few that was lucky enough to be born in West Texas and not know about public until, I mean, I was 19, 18 before I ever really knew that it was a thing.
Right. It's almost like a gift. You moved to Alabama. And you're like, oh my God, dude, this is all mine. Well, I can do whatever I want on this.
That gift goes further too, because, when you grow up in that, you just kind of assume that's how you have to hunt everywhere. You know, if I grew up watching Michael Waddell hunting in Kansas, right? Or Bill Jordan hunting in Milk River, Montana or whatever. And you're like, man, that would be awesome to be able to go to hunt Montana, but I'm not Bill Jordan, you know, like I don't have Bill Jordan kind of money. I got that Realtree money.
Yeah.
I got, you know, at the time I was in ministry, my dad was a pastor. So it was like, we got pastor money. You know, our type of pastor is not the type that has a whole lot of money like the ones on TV. and so, I started hunting public land here. I'm like, well, public land's in other states too. And now like I've killed deer and turkeys in I don't know how many states since that point, because it opened up my mind, opened up my eyes to what's actually available to us, you know?
Yeah.
And it became the cost of gas and tags rather than an outfitter, which is a big, huge deal.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Even today, like not necessarily the public land thing. Like obviously I try to go out west once every year. Usually it's South Dakota. So it's like a cheap cabin, a little bit of food and a gas money is really what I'm doing. But, I'm to the point now where I'm really like considering if I'm ever going to do a shoulder mount again for a deer, because they're, you know, it's into the $700-$800 now for a shoulder mount of a whitetail. And I'm just like, dude, you know what I could do with $700? I could do another out of state trip every year with that much money if I slept in my truck. Right. And it's just like, why do that? And so I'm looking for experiences in that public land, man. It's something else. It's crazy when the first time I ever went out west and I had to start thinking about, it was an elk hunt, right? In September. And I was like, I didn't really know anything about it until, I started getting Onyx and I started looking and I'm just like, holy shit, I got like 30,000 acres I can go jump around on, or even more. And then like right across the road is another 30,000 acres that I can do whatever I want. And I was just like, dude, there's a lot of opportunity here, dude. So
yeah,
fired me up.
Yeah. And like, of course, yes, it's harder, you know, it's not just going back to the Realtree example. Like those guys are going and chilling in a cabin and watching football at night, eating a
steak
dinner.
Yeah.
And waking up at, 5:30 to go sit in their stand, to go take a buggy out to the stand. That's not the game that I play.
Right.
Right. And it's probably not the game that you play, even on your private stuff that you hunt.
Right.
up there where you're at. Mm-hmm. That's not the same sport that we play. And I'm not even saying that there's anything wrong with it. If I was if I had Realtree money, I can't tell you that I wouldn't be right there doing it. I get to spend a lot more time with my family. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, so like it's not the same sport. I still love watching. I like watching Monster Bucks when I see it, you know, show up. I'm a big fan of those guys, but it's a different game. But I'd be amiss to say that they didn't have a huge part to my growth and an evolution as a deer hunter for sure. Like I loved watching that stuff. That's what sparked the fire for me.
Yeah.
Was going to Blockbuster and renting one of those.
Oh, they had those at Blockbuster?
Oh, heck yeah, they did. They had about three of them. Whatever the newer Monster Bucks was, I think it was usually on there. They had some Drury stuff, mm-hmm. but they also had the funny dudes from Mississippi that did all the goofy spoof. Oh my gosh, why am I drawing?
T-Bone did like T-Bone,
kind of like T-Bone, and kind of like Realtree did with the Incomplete Deer Hunter, with Jeff Foxworthy. Oh my god, TK and Mike, golly.
Okay. I don't even know about those guys.
You should check them out. They're freaking hilarious.
Okay.
But they had TK and Mike stuff at Blockbuster. It was like comedy hunting comedy, you know?
Yeah. When I would go to, our local video store in my town, it was called Adventureland. I wasn't trying to rent, I was trying to find ways to rent rated R movies.
trying to find some NC-17s.
and then I'd go to check it out and they're like, can you call your dad? We need to call your dad, or do you have a note to rent this? And I'd hand them a note that like a buddy of mine wrote, or they would call a house and a buddy of mine would be there and be like, yeah, my son can have that. And like, that's the kind of dirtball I was when I was growing up. So
teenage dirtbag, baby.
Exactly. All right. I got a couple things I want to talk about today, but before we do that, I got to say thanks to the partners at the Nine Finger Chronicles. First off, I'm going to go backwards today. If you are looking for a t-shirt with a deer on it, go check out my company, fullsneakgear.com. If you're looking for a badass trail camera, go check out Reveal. They have recently done a ton of updates and upgrades to their app. So if you haven't updated your app in a while, go do that. They've also introduced this new app called Habitat IQ. Go download that. If you're a habitat guy, or if you're looking to have some potential upgrades to your property. So go visit tacticam.com/cameras. Go check out the cameras. They got some new stuff coming down the pipe, maybe this year. This year at some point. And then I think next year there's going to be some stuff coming out that's going to blow your mind. So outside of that, go check out Reveal. Next on the list is Code Blue Scents. If you're looking for real or synthetic deer urines, if you're looking for scent elimination products, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kits, my personal favorite, go check out CodeBlueScents.com. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And then lastly, if you're looking for, in my opinion, one of the best broadheads on the market, go check out WaspArchery.com. You got mechanicals, you got fixed blades, and they both destroy deer tissue. And that's why I like them. So discount code NFC20 at WaspArchery.com. All right, Parker. Man, every state right now, well, not Iowa, because we're awesome, but a lot of states right now, especially Michigan, and based off of the research that I've done, Michigan, maybe some other states in the area, I believe New York is starting the conversation of a one buck state. Missouri is talking about making a whole bunch of different rules and regulations. And I just kind of want to talk a little bit about that and not necessarily, I want to talk to it from a standpoint of not necessarily knowing too much about what's going on in Michigan, other than what I've had buddies talk to me about who are either for and or against, you know, some of these things. But I want to pop up something that I just pulled up before we started recording, and that is the Michigan Natural Resources Commission, the NRC, voted to approve a regulation change establishing a one buck rule in the Lower Peninsula effective March 1st, 2027. This policy shifts from the current two buck limit to one antlered deer per per hunter year, aiming to improve a buck to doe ratio, boost older buck numbers, and manage herd size. Okay. And this is going to be effective March 1st. So this upcoming season, business as usual. Next year, we have this policy change, and it's to the Lower Peninsula. Now, not being from Michigan, why do you think all of a sudden people, it's not really, it was kind of all of a sudden, wasn't it? It was like this year and last year, the big, like a big push. What are your thoughts on something like this as an outsider looking in? This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code NFC at checkout for 20% off on all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You know, I don't know what the, why the suddenness of it, you know, like it does seem kind of sudden. Mm-hmm. I've seen Kevin Vistason, I think is how you say his last name, from the Deer Hunter podcast. I've seen him making a few posts about it, talking about it back and forth. Here's the thing that I struggle with, Dan, is like down here, and I don't want to compare it, but I'm going to.
Yep.
Down here, we get 3 bucks in Alabama. In the state of Alabama, season wide, and you can pretty much shoot them wherever you want. You get $3, and we get like the beginning of November through February 10th to hunt them with a rifle, right? So to gun hunt them, so whatever that is, 3.5 months. Is that, am I right? Is that 3.5 months? November, December, January.
Yeah. And you get, does your season go into February?
February 10th.
All right. Yep. So you guys get a rifle season that entire time.
Yeah. We have one month of archery season, depending on what zone you're in. It starts October 1st or October 15th. Like, and it's a month long, pretty much a month out until gun season, wherever zone you're at. And so, I look at it through that lens and I'm like, y'all got $2. I've been to Michigan. I've hunted Michigan now twice, once for turkeys and once for deer. And there was no shortage of deer, period. Like, we saw more deer, more big bucks. Everyone that I know from Michigan, like, that I know, usually every year they'll kill a really, really good buck, especially the guys that are hunting private land. And so I hear people gripe and complain about the opportunity in Michigan and this and that and whatever. And I get it. Wisconsin's right next to you. Iowa's close. Ohio's close. All these really good states are next to you, but they've got it. Like, Michigan's great. I love, and I knew I was going to feel that way whenever I got there, because you may even be asking the wrong guy. A Southern guy just ain't going to really feel sorry for a guy in Michigan that's complaining about, we don't have a mature buck in this whole state or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you do. So my friends in Michigan kill bigger bucks than my friends in Alabama. How's that? Is that fair to say? Like, in a simple way, when I'm looking at it, I'm like, you guys are still like, what are y'all complaining about? You know, now we get into, maybe they're not complaining for the sake, they see into the future, right? Like, they see like, okay, this is the way it's going.
Yeah.
And I can't really speak to that, man. I'm not a part of the Michigan culture. I don't want anybody to think that I'm trying to down Michigan guys on this. I think they have a great state. I think they have a wonderful state. Now, I will say the amount of pressure that I've seen in Michigan, not during turkey season, but not really even during deer season. It was the human sign that I was seeing, like ladder stands. You have one field. Let's say on a particular WMA, you've got 70 different crop fields on one field that has no reason. You might have 3 or 4 ladder stands on the edge of it.
Yeah.
during deer season in October, you walk through the woods, you know, you find a random spot. Heck, you find a good spot, it might have three or four trail cameras on it. So the pressure is legit. Like yeah. those guys, they're not lying about that. And I don't think they're lying about the quality going down or whatever, only they would know. I just know that it's still pretty dang good.
Yeah.
You know, all things considered, it's pretty good.
Yeah. So I can go down to Alabama and pull three tags, right? Like,
yeah.
Anybody.
If you buy your license, you'll get three deer tags and four turkey tags.
Yeah.
Which is that's crazy. That's
bananas to me.
It's crazy. Right?
And so even with like the research that's been done, and I just had a conversation with the lead biologist or the guy who's in charge of all the studies and stuff, like the turkey population in the South is decreasing, right? It's in the process of going down. Mm-hmm. And so that's an issue. You just mentioned that in the state of Alabama, like compared to Michigan, $3, man, that's a lot of opportunity. Now, let me ask you
$3 and 3 months to hunt them with a rifle. So exactly. You're going to kill your $3. Like if you try, you can, there's a good chance you can kill your $3.
All right. So does everybody try then? Do you feel
No. I mean, I think most people probably kill one or two.
Yeah.
And don't.
Yeah.
Fill the last one. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the percentage is, so I can't even really answer that. I would say most people don't tag out probably, but most people kill one or two.
Yeah. Do you think that $3 and four turkeys, tom turkeys, is a little bit overkill? Do you think that needs to be reduced? Like, I look at something like that. Now, listen, the state of Iowa is literally cut in half, dude. Anything south of Interstate 80, that's where all the exceptional deer hunting is. Yes, you can find pockets north of Interstate 80 in the northern part of the states, but you can also find no trees in certain parts of the state either, just like around farms, right? Windbreaks and things like that. So it's heavy ag all over the place, right? And so the $1, like it's not even, Iowa's not a $1 state. We're a $2 state, right? We have one firearm and one archery tag that you can use. But what I'm getting at is like, it's just the state of Alabama probably has a little bit more cover than the state of Iowa as far as timbered acres or covered acres. And so that just means that there's more places for deer to live. I have also seen and heard, and you live down there, so maybe you can tell me, every year, dude, big bucks come out of the state of Alabama. Like, given the state of Alabama, we're not talking like giant 200 inchers, you know, but there's 140.
Been.
Yeah, there has been, but I'm talking like, it's not uncommon to pull a 140, 150 out of the state of Alabama.
No, you'll see that if you were to sit on Facebook all day, every day during hunting season, you'll probably see a 140 get posted every day, you know, from Alabama, like it 130s, 140s. Now I will say that's probably, now there are the 200s that come out every once in a while, maybe once a year, you might see somebody shoot a 200 or something once or twice or three times. It's just very rare.
Right.
And so that 140 mark, 130, 140 is kind of more of a pinnacle number, I would say, than it is down there. You know, I've hunted Missouri, 130. If you got a few days to hunt, you might kill one, you know, like you might kill one on the first day, you know, and there's not any shortage of those running around up in your part of the world. And so that number goes down a little bit, but no, there's, 2 years ago, I guess not this past season before that, I killed a 144 on public in Alabama. And I mean, and my buddy Pablo, he killed a 142 last year, you know, like they're there, you know,
it's just the effort. And that's what some of the guys in Michigan are saying.
Sure.
They're saying that if you just have to put those deer are there, you just got to put a little work in to go get them. Right.
They're there. And like guys like Andy May are doing it multiple times a year out there. The best hunters that I know out here. Now, I will say Andy May's probably one of the, like, I think if he came down here, he'd probably kill the 140 every year. Number one, the dude's
he's exceptional.
Yeah. He's an exceptional shape. He's got an exceptional mental capacity. Like, he's a good shot. He's good with his gear. Like, he's got all the things. He can hunt anywhere he wants.
Yeah.
But the best hunters I know here are not killing 140s every single year. They're not killing even 130s. I know one guy that kills some pretty big bucks every year, but they're not that kind of numbers.
Right.
My point is that Andy, the fact that guys like Andy exist in Michigan, and there's more than just him. I know there is. There's guys killing megas every year in Michigan. The fact that they even exist tells me it's not like awful. You know, it's not just terror. And I've been to Michigan. There's deer almost on every corner in Michigan. There's a lot of deer in Michigan. Yeah. And that's what they all say. A lot of deer, not any big deer. The first deer that I ever saw in Michigan hunting was a 100-inch deer, a 100-inch buck. Mm-hmm. Everybody there was like, oh, that's awesome. Because I think 100 inches is like the book buck that, I think that's the cutoff for book buck or whatever, whenever.
For the state of Michigan, I think Pope and Young's 130. Boone and Crockett's 170.
Sure. Yeah. I think, but the record book for the state, I think, is like, it's not very high. It's like 110, 115, maybe even 100 inches. I don't know.
Not sure about that.
But they're, that was the first deer that I saw. And so my perception probably is skewed just a little bit because of the way that it, or maybe everyone has that experience in Michigan too. I don't know. But I didn't see any shortage of anything. But I can't say that I living there, I wouldn't be in favor of a one buck rule because I know that the pressure there is for real. Mm-hmm. And you have that many people with two tags, you know, it could help.
So why, first off, before we get into like some more of the details of this, why do you think all of a sudden there's these pushes across multiple states to change these rules to what feels like reducing non-residents and increasing, like they're saying it's to balance the sex ratio, right? But you don't balance the sex ratio by like just strictly reducing buck kill numbers. You got to shoot some does at some point, which the state of Michigan just isn't doing. Okay.
Yeah. Which is, that's unfortunate for them. Killing does is one of the best things in the whole world.
Right.
It's so much fun. And they need to do it more for sure. And I noticed that when I was there, the amount of does was unreal. There's a ton of does in Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. And I knew that too. Like I've hunted Michigan once and I figured it out, right? Like I'm just like, holy cow, I saw lots of does.
Yeah.
I also saw in the headlights of my truck when I was pulling, rounding a curve to go down the road to get for a morning hunt, I saw 140 inch 10 pointer in the field. So they're there, right?
Yeah.
But why do you think hunters across the nation are all of a sudden just like starting to put their foot down about their state and shake up these rules and regulations? What seem to be like my gut feeling tells me it's less about any type of balance or sex ratio, and it's more about getting bucks to grow bigger antlers.
You want me to tell you what I think it's about?
Okay.
Because it's a little bit different. I think there's some people that have that mindset. Yeah. No, I'm not going to, but I think most of the support that you see for either side is due to social media outrage. It's like that you see, I think a lot of the issues are social media driven. People want to put regulations in place when they, well, I noticed it when I was in Missouri, you get on these forums on Facebook and these guys would, I mean, they just dog non-residents for no reason. I mean, a guy posts 125 inch 8-point that he killed on a WMA or conservation area in Missouri. And the guys are like dogging him for it. I mean, like it's bad. The Missouri forums are, they hate non-residents. They hate them. With a passion. I'm sure there's other states that are this way too. Michigan might be the same. I don't know that there's a lot of non-residents coming into Michigan, like they are in Missouri. But I think the social media, when you post something on social media like that with an outrage, you get other people who have the same experience, who have the same outrage, and it just snowballs, man. I don't know that for fact. I'm sure a lot of this is based on real actual data, but I think a lot of it's based, a lot of the general population's support for regulations is rooted in jealousy, 100% rooted in jealousy.
Yeah.
When you see the average, when Bo Bill or whatever his name is from Tennessee is seeing on Facebook that the state wants to limit something about non-residents. He thinks back to the time that a non-resident came in on, you know, walked in on him or beat him to his gate or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of it comes from, at least in what I see. When people support something like that, it's usually rooted in jealousy in the population, as far as the population is concerned.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're getting a lot of the support for it. People want something to gripe and moan about.
Yeah. I've also heard the negative parts of a lot about this, where states like Wisconsin, states like Minnesota, states like Michigan, maybe New York could be thrown in there, Pennsylvania. We're talking deer camp type states, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's a huge influx of people that go to deer camps. They shut down schools. People take time off of work so they can go to deer camp. Do you feel like I've heard on social media that this could potentially hurt environment, that type of tradition, because the archers get it first, they shoot their buck. Well, they don't want to go to deer camp anymore because they've already filled that tag. Do you think that's going to ever turn into an issue in something like this?
If it does, it is that individual's own fault.
Yeah.
If it does, I tag out almost every year in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And I have deer camps in January and February that I go to, and I shoot does. I mean, we just talked about that. That's an issue, right? Maybe in a state like Michigan or Missouri or whatever, is people not like, go shoot your does. If that's it, then you don't really like deer camp. You like to kill stuff. And, because and listen, power to you. I like to kill stuff and I like deer camp. So, I try to figure out a way to go if I can to any camp, whether I'm tagged out or not. So, you know, if somebody has that idea that it's going to kill the deer camp mentality, well, that sounds a whole lot like they're just trying to prove a point, you know, right. Like self-sabotage more than anything.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, I have a very skewed reality of where I have grown up hunting, where I live, and what properties I currently have access to. Dude, compared to the rest of the nation, dude, I got it made. I know that, right? But I, cause not only do I have access to larger antlered animals, but I also have, access to well-balanced deer herds, right? It's gotta be where I hunt, man. It's gotta be close to 50-50. On one of my farms. On the other farms, it's probably 25-75, or, you know, like, I don't know, 30-70 or something like that, bucks to does. But that's still really good, mm-hmm. you know, compared to the rest of the nation. And so, but I'm thinking here about some of this stuff. Like, I'm to the point now where I want to start involving my kids and bringing them hunting. Well, that means that there's a potential for more deer and younger deer to get shot, especially bucks. Like my boy this year, he shot a doe last year, and this year he says he wants a buck. Okay. Which means I got to go find him a buck, and I'm not going to hold him off on, a 90 incher that walks by or whatever the case is. Like I'm just going to let him go. That means that he's not going to grow up to be a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, whatever mature buck. So that means there's going to be less deer potentially on the farm. There's going to be more of a skewed, you know, sex ratio potentially. But at this point, I'm looking at it and it's like, what is the value of antlers? Or is opportunity the most important thing, right? And being able to have deer in front of you to shoot, not just antlers, but deer in general. And I think like there's some states where I've interviewed guys from Vermont before, and they're like, dude, I saw 4 deer an entire season, you know, and maybe 2 of them were within shooting range. And so you look at something like that, you're like, damn, I'd go crazy having to go from what I have to something like that, or go hunt a rut in Michigan if it's truly that pressured. So it just, I'm always thinking about what is actually important. Is it access? Is it opportunity, like shot opportunities? Is it big antlers? And then some people get a hold of what they really want, rally the troops. And, you know, we live in a democracy, And so if you can, if you're good at rallying the troops, like this is an example, Michigan's changed its law.
That's a lot there, Dan.
I know.
That's a lot there to unpack. So to your point, I agree with you big time about what, about the confusion of what is the actual goal here. Is it big antlers? Is it opportunity? Well, the opportunity, you know, this has been my favorite thing about turkey hunting. Okay. I know you told me to hold off on turkey talk, but I want to say this because it's important. My favorite thing about turkey hunting is there are two types of turkeys that you shoot. There's jakes and there's gobblers, right? Jakes are the lesser, right? They're more like the spike basket rack of the turkey world, but gobblers are a gobbler, man. And for me, without the outside influence, and I look back to when I was a kid, when like the purest, without social media, without any influence other than Blockbuster Monster Bucks. When I was a kid, my first buck that I ever shot was this goofy looking, stupid looking 7-point. I was with my dad, and my emotions in that moment were like, both of our emotions in that moment were, you thought it was a giant 150-inch deer. But it wasn't. And honestly, when I go out, if I go to Florida and I get a shot at a spike, I'm just that same amount of pumped up, excited, ready to go, because the bar in Florida is so much lower, right? And so if the bar lowers, I can live with that, right? Like I'm not speaking of what I want to see, but what I can live with, I can live with, as long as there's deer to hunt, if the biggest bucks are spikes, bro, then we're going to go spike hunting every fall, you know, like that's, and I'm going to feel the same way. I'm not going to quit. I don't do this for the size of a rack. Those are great. I love shooting a big buck. It's fun. It's arguably funner than shooting a small buck just because of the knowledge of what you did, you know, the rarity of what you did. But at the end of the day, dude, like I wake up the next morning just as pumped up about filling a tag on a doe during archery season as I do the big buck, you know, and so for me personally, no, man, like it's not about the antlers. And maybe that's why I feel the way that I do about a state like Michigan. I feel like they've got everything that I feel like they live in a dreamland, you know, like every time I go there, I'm like, this place is awesome. You don't have to drive far to get to public. Like there's deer and turkeys, pretty much any gate that you park at, you know, that there might not be a booner, but there's at least game to hunt behind that gate. Yeah. And you know that you have that knowledge. I've been to places where you don't have that knowledge. Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, I think maybe I'm a little less graceful for them in that, because I feel like what I like to do with hunting is all experience based, you know.
Do you think like social media does drive a lot of what people get to see and absorb? And you've already talked about that. It almost feels like a lot of these rules and regulations are like, look at all the big bucks at all the other states that we have, right? And we want big bucks too. Mm-hmm. Well, let's change some things. Well, remember what two states carry the most hunters in the entire country?
I don't know. I think it's Pennsylvania and Michigan, though.
Yep, exactly. Is that right? Two. Well, and then I think Texas, just because of size and population. Yeah, but I think, especially in the Midwest, Pennsylvania and then Michigan. So it blows my mind. Like, there's obviously way more people who hunt in those states every year. Of course, right? Of course, there's going to be a lower buck ratio. You know, bucks, especially in a culture and a tradition where the buck is king, right? Like guys are shooting four corns just to say that they've got their buck, right? Of course. In Iowa, the culture is not to do that, right? Like it's crazy. I grew up where I passed bucks before I shot a buck. Right? Believe that. Like that's the culture where it's like, don't shoot a four corn, dude. There's
even
so many,
even if it's your first deer, even if it's, just don't do it.
Even if it's your first deer. You know, like I tell this story a thousand times, dude. I got a trail camera and I went and I put it out and, I went, you know, I got the, it was a film camera. So I had to drive all the way back into town, get it developed. And then I put it in, you know, I got it developed and I went back out to the farm and I, the farmer was in the combine and, he came down to look at him. I'm like, check this buck out. And it was like, dude, it was like a legit 130 class 10, maybe a 3-year-old, 2-year-old or something like that. And I go, look at this buck. And I was jacked. And he goes, don't shoot that buck, dude. There's so many, he's like, there's so many bigger deer out here for you to go chase and shoot. Don't shoot that buck because next year he's a big one. He turns big and, or even bigger the year after. So go find a big one. I was like, huh?
You got the old mentor men in Iowa telling people not to shoot. You got the guys at Jackson, Alabama, like, you didn't shoot that spike?
Exactly.
What are you thinking?
Exactly. You know? So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's culture. A lot of it is culture driven too. So, it just, the goal is, if you're listening to this and you're from Michigan, my goal is to have, in the next week or so, I would love to have a supporter of this rule and regulation and someone who opposed it on at this, like, not necessarily at the same time, but just a conversation about how this came to be. Because I feel like it was just like, boom. It was almost like, maybe they were at the Michigan Deer Classic and some guy was like, dude, I didn't see shit this year for big deer, right? What did you see? I didn't see shit either. What did you see? I didn't see shit either. And then it was just like almost in South Park where it's like rabble, 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 rabble. You know, all these people started forming this group. And then it's like, you know what? We got something here. Let's try it. Right. Now, the other thing is, I have a buddy who lives in northern Michigan, the UP, but northern lower peninsula. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to me about the opposition when they introduced, there's 7 or 8 counties, maybe more, that have antler point restrictions. Okay. And they introduced the antler point restrictions and the huge hubbub about antler point restrictions. Like, dude, don't tell me what I can and can't shoot, blah, blah, blah. I want to shoot my buck. I should do whatever I want. Well, what happened out of that is bigger bucks. Okay. And then people started to slow down a little bit in what they were bitching about because it turned into bigger antler deer in those areas. And now you start to hear people like, do you support antler point restrictions? And if you're from that area, they're like, hell yeah, I do, because I got to see the direct result of antler point restrictions. Even some of the guys who are, you know, like, my buddy Bob, he lives up there, right? And he's just like, dude, nobody wanted it. It happened. And yes, bigger bucks happened because of it. And now everybody's like, oh, okay. So it hurt for a couple years. And so I wonder if you're going to start seeing something like that where people are just completely opposed to it. And then all of a sudden there's, you know, 140s around every corner in Michigan or, you know, some shit like that. Or people are starting to see bigger deer get shot because there's only so many bucks that can get shot now. It's essentially the opportunity is cut in half. Therefore, the guys who are whatever percentage of people who shoot 2 bucks a year in Michigan has, you know, that's gone to zero now. Mm-hmm. So now those bucks squeak through to make it to whatever age class is next for them. So, and then if it turns into, yeah, I like this now.
Perhaps what you get out of this deal, because I mean, you kind of threw this on me when we got on here about what the actual topic was.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a ton of time to like really think about it, but I've been all over the place in this conversation. Like, I support it. Yeah, don't, you know, like quit griping about it. Why are y'all don't have nothing to gripe about, quit griping. But at the same time, I think it'll work.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you know, a 1 buck thing. Here's what I see happen all the time. People are like, oh, I'm going to just shoot a small buck just to get the monkey off my back. And I do this too.
Yeah.
So this is like, if you have more than one tag, that first tag is kind of a wild card, you know, like you just shoot whatever gets you excited just to get the monkey off your back, meat in the freezer, whatever it might be. Now you go to a 1 buck. Now all of a sudden you can't do that anymore. You got to make sure that 1 buck is what you want to shoot. Otherwise you're done.
Yeah.
And so I don't think everybody's probably tagging out, but I'll bet a lot of people are shooting that first monkey off their back buck yeah. which means a lot of young bucks are getting shot.
Yeah. Do you think that if I want to talk hypothetically about where you hunt in Alabama, Alabama goes to a one buck state. Okay. Mm-hmm. Does that two things? One, do you think they start shooting more does? Two, do you think that the bucks all of a sudden get bigger in Alabama because of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's more bucks. We had a year where the acorn crop was really bad, really, mm-hmm. really bad. Deer didn't get killed that year. Not very many deer got killed that year. The following year, dude, it was crazy. I mean, it was a madhouse in the woods during the rut because a bunch of bucks that would have got shot at 2 years old are now three, and they're sporting a decent rack. And now mm-hmm. the 3 year olds that would have got shot at three or four, and they're tanks. And it was a crazy year. I killed all three of my bucks back to back, three hunts, one, two, three, killed them all. Yeah. And all of them were great bucks. And that year was crazy. And so I thought about that a lot mm-hmm. of like, if we did do that, you know, I thought about it with turkeys. If we did that, would it have the same effect? Like this many deer or this many turkeys didn't get killed last year, so there's that many more on the landscape. And that's the only real data study, I guess, that I have personally.
Yeah.
But I do think that it would work. Absolutely, I think it would work. Yeah. I think it will work in Michigan. I think you're going to see bigger bucks. My only question is like, did you really need to? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what comes of this. If it's going to reduce opportunity, like I wonder if there's if it's going to reduce opportunity for anybody.
It shouldn't, because everybody still gets to shoot one deer. To me, if you get to shoot a deer, your opportunity, you don't lose any opportunity.
Yeah, man. Kansas is a perfect example. Have you hunted Kansas before?
Mm-hmm, I did.
Yeah. So that's a great example because really there's not a lot of people who hunt it, right? There's a lot of wide open spaces there with no trees. And deer still like, dude, it's just a crazy state how deer just show up and they're giant.
They're
right?
They're just there.
It's crazy. Like my uncle lives in Kansas, and he's kind of, he just is like, don't worry. You know, when the rut comes up, when the rut starts, they'll show up. And he runs trail cameras too, right? So it's not like he doesn't know 100% what's up there, but what trail cameras has done is it has allowed them, the cattle come out of this pasture, and he knows that means the does are coming in. And yes, there's a baiting element in Kansas to that as well, which pulls the does, which pulls the bucks. And so it's just crazy that they just show up.
Just appear.
Appear, right? And that's a low population, but in a state like Michigan or Pennsylvania, where there's probably a trail camera around on every 20 acre lot out there, they know exactly what there is. And I'm just trying to think out loud here where I understand it, right? Like, let's say there's a 300 acre square and it's all broken up into like 80s and 40s and maybe there's 100, maybe 100. The person who has the best terrain feature in there is going to have the best opportunity at deer movement throughout the course of, let's say, a rut, right? Or if you have the food, you might be the guy who has the best opportunity to kill deer during the rifle season or even in the archery season. And so then that one big buck shows up and he's on several trail cameras on a whole bunch of different properties. He gets shot, and now there's seven, eight other hunters that still have tags in their pocket. They're going to shoot a deer. And so then the next layer gets peeled out. And so in Iowa and in Kansas, you probably don't have that as much because there's less hunters on the landscape because, and I always bring this up, the hunters per acre. How many hunters, are there, or acres per hunter, whatever you want to, however you want to look at it, what that number's like. In Michigan, there's probably one hunter takes up less acres or uses less acres than a guy in Iowa would. Like, for example, me, right? Like I got, I'm good, dude. I got a lot of acres to my name, but on another farm, you know, there's four or five guys over 400 acres. That's still pretty good compared to up north where there's two hunters on 40 or three hunters on 80 or whatever the case is, right? So you do that math and Iowa, Kansas looks good. Missouri might look good, but then Pennsylvania, certain parts of Pennsylvania, New York, higher populations, that over time, you know, the properties have been divvied up and chopped up, and to the point where it's like, holy cow, there's a lot of people in this section.
Yeah, man. And the people, I think the people part of this is the, with deer specifically, is probably the driving factor on this, like the pressure, like guys are seeing people, there's more people, there's too many people in the woods. I think if you figured out a way to figure that out, then you might get it figured out. But I'll also say this, dude, I travel a lot. Okay. Yeah. I have traveled a lot more than I do right this second, but I've traveled to most of the United States in regions, and outside of opening day, whether it be archery or rifle, outside of opening day, I have never seen pressure that ruined it for me. Do you know what I mean? Like just an unreasonable amount of pressure. Now, even in Missouri, I saw more pressure in Missouri on opening day gun season than I've ever seen in my life. And I still killed a buck in Missouri with my gun, you know, like it wasn't detrimental pressure. And so like, even going to, I went to Michigan last week. I was in Michigan turkey hunting, and there's people everywhere, dude. There's like, I'm among populations. I slept at a Walmart parking lot 10 minutes away. There was a big town close. I had every turkey to myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's in Michigan. This is a state we're talking about that apparently has a hunter, you know, every yard.
Yeah.
And I had these turkeys to myself.
Yeah.
So you're not going to hear me complain a ton about pressure. Yeah. Because I just don't think it's as bad as everybody's saying it is. I have moments where I pressure ruins a day or something, but I just don't think it's that terrible. You know, like I find success. I go after it. I get after it. I work hard. I get up earlier than people, and people are almost never a determining factor on whether or not I'm going to be successful.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like a lot of people think that there's people on every corner, and there's just not, even in the most populated areas. There's just not.
Well, this has been a really good conversation today. It could go a couple layers deep. I had this crazy thought in my head. Well, we're going to shut it down, but I want to leave everybody with this. Do you think that there will be rules in the future? And I don't want you to answer this because I'm going to stop recording as soon as I ask it. Do you think there's going to be rules in the future where all of a sudden people get so pissed off that they actually start reducing the hunter numbers by law, saying you can't hunt this year, but you can hunt next year? Like, that to me seems crazy, but the way things are going, it doesn't seem like it's that far-fetched of an idea these days.
I've seen crazier.
Exactly.
Yeah, see crazier things.
Yep. So shout out to everybody who's paying attention to this podcast. Again, if you're from Michigan and you want to talk about this, hit me up on Instagram and I'd love to chat. Parker, appreciate your time.
Yeah, man. Thanks
we'll
for
talk to
me.
You when we talk to you, and good vibes, everybody.